You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. I hope to see you live and in person at this fall's 6th annual Social Brand Forum. Digital marketing smarts in the heart of the heartland, right here in Iowa City, Iowa. Join past on-brand guests like Jason Falls, Melissa Agnes, Marcus Sheridan, and more. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they use promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Michael Brenner. Michael is a globally recognized keynote speaker, author, and the CEO of Marketing Insider Group. He has worked in leadership positions in sales and marketing for global brands like SAP and Nielsen, as well as for thriving startups. Today, Michael shares his passion on leadership and marketing strategies that deliver customer value and business impact. He is recognized by the Huffington Post as a top business keynote speaker and by Forbes as a top CMO influencer. Michael, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks so much for having me, Nick.
Well, it is great to chat with you again. I was going to say, speaking of you being a globally recognized keynote speaker, I think that is the last place you and I connected face-to-face was in Malmo, Sweden at Apsis.
It was.
Email Marketing Evolved.
It was. It was the day after Mr. Trump won the presidency here, which was a very strange and interesting day to be overseas.
Yeah.
That was a great conference, though. Great conference.
No, you are reminding me, and I believe I went first on that day and was thinking, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'm an American on an international stage, and don't I have to say something about the elephant in the room, pun intended.
Yes. Yes, and you handled it very well.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, that was something that I had maybe banished to the back of my mind about that that fun event.
Yes.
But you know, in talking as you do about marketing globally and being a CMO influencer, in knowing that community so well, what do you find is a paramount issue or concern of that group about branding and marketing today?
You know, it's interesting. I sense a lot of fear. You know, and it sounds a little dramatic, but you know, we started to see some real culling in the last few months. You know, you saw Coca-Cola, you know, basically essentially ridded themselves of the entire CMO role. And, you know, I think that generated a lot of conversation. You know, I've been saying for years that marketing has a marketing problem. And, you know, the point of that statement is that most consumers, when I tell people I'm in marketing, they say, oh, you know, what ad did you create? And, you know, so most people think marketing is just advertising, and most executives that aren't in marketing have the same impression. And when you live in a world that is tuning out and you know, resisting and in some cases even punishing brands that advertise, it puts a lot of pressure and a lot of fear into the minds of CMOs. So, you know, I fear is, you know, like I said, maybe a little overdramatic, but, you know, maybe concern is obviously, you know, I think a valid term. The reason I think they're afraid and the main challenge that they're trying to face and overcome is – on one hand, you've got CEOs that say the marketing department has to deliver revenue, real something valuable to the organization, and many CEOs see the value in marketing. On the other hand, you've got executives and CEOs and heads of sales that are telling marketing, you know, hey, I want the cake, the revenue. I also want to tell you how to bake it, you know, and it's by, you know, sponsoring this golf, you know, event or creating this television or ad or turning our logo blue instead of red. You know, like everyone has an opinion about marketing. And so that's the struggle. And I think CMOs are taking one of those two courses, you know, the hard course of being strategic and looking at marketing as a strategic asset to the business is one path, and that's the harder path. And the other one is, you know, the order taker and the traditional marketing, you know, of old, of, you know, just kind of do what you're told, get on Snapchat because the CEO asked you to, and you know, those folks are really, you know, biding their time, I think, and hoping that the world changes again. And I'm afraid to say it probably won't.
Well, yeah, I do. I sense this same fear that it feels like we're in Star Wars talking about a disturbance in the Force. But
yes.
But yeah, it does seem like it's this kind of strange environment, because for a while it was also kind of preceded by like, we're okay, right? We're okay. We're still no bad things. And so it's kind of... it's kind of pendulum swinging that again, I think that the tougher move, like you said, is to stop and actually think through what you're doing and why you're doing it. Otherwise, you do end up as that that order taker just doing all of the things for the sake of doing all of the things, which might, you know, not produce a short-term disruption for your internal situation, but ultimately isn't sustainable to keep at it, to continue to do everything.
That's right. That's right.
So where does a branding and marketing leader start with doing what they do better than they're currently doing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's and you saw me kind of, I think, deliver for the first time the message that I'm trying to deliver now, and have done so a couple, you know, almost a dozen times since I saw you in Sweden. And it's essentially a message of leadership and innovation. And, you know, and like, why aren't I talking about, you know, Snapchat? You know, maybe we should be talking about Snapchat, but only in the context of the role the CMO plays, the role that marketers and brand people play in the organization. And the role is one of leadership. The role is one of essentially bringing forth the greatest innovations inside every organization. That's the role of marketing. And so I'll go back to what I said, you know, marketing has a marketing problem. If marketing isn't just advertising, what is it? Well, it's a conversation. It's, you know, I think the textbook, I remember the picture of my marketing 101 class. It was like a, you know, a line from the company to a customer that went two ways. And, you know, I think we forget that marketing is a conversation between companies and customers. And so the role of marketing today, and this takes courage, and that's why I talk about leadership and innovation. The thing that marketers that really want to separate themselves have to do is they have to have the courage to stand up and define marketing as a strategic asset for the business. And that takes leadership. That takes courage. But when the CMOs that I've talked to that have done this, they're just, you know, they feel completely free. And their purpose in life is to essentially just highlight the innovations that are being shared with them by their customers, that are being, you know, identified by, you know, these ideas that are coming from all over the organization that aren't even in marketing. And so marketing, you know, for these courageous leaders is taking this completely transformational role and really invigorating, you know, these courageous leaders, you know, as a total, you know, dichotomy to the, you know, the scared kind of traditional marketers that are just, you know, hey, we got to get on Snapchat. No.
Well, it's easier to talk about the channels. I mean, you said, you know, the go-to thought is when you're in marketing, what ad did you create? And I think that's, you know, also true of, you know, what you know, what channels are you on, and what forms of content you're creating. It's you know, what I talk about a lot are a lot of times the, you know, the checklist items. It's easy to work the checklist. It's much harder to do what you're talking about, which is looking deeper, both internally, but you also talked about customer innovation. And I think the long-term wins are powerful there, but it's scary to go find those because it doesn't always yield immediate results. And it also doesn't always, I think the other thing that can be scary about that is, to your earlier point, it doesn't look like marketing. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us want what we produce in this scary, fear-driven time. It's equally scary when it doesn't look like what marketing traditionally has. You know, that there's not, look, I made an ad. Look, we have a new presence on a new social channel. But I think that the overall impact, when you are surfacing those, you know, internal and external customer innovations, can be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's the gap that we need to bridge in marketing. Is on one hand, you've got the pressure from the business that is expecting revenue, you know, actually quantifiable results. And on the other hand, you've got the business that's asking us to do stuff, you know, get on channels, you know, check the boxes, like you said. And so, you know, there's only one way to bridge that gap. And the way to bridge that gap is by asking. So in the digital world we live in, you know, the reason marketing had sort of a little bit of a honeymoon period was once all these new social channels popped up, the whole business turned to marketing and said, hey, you got to go figure this out. This is exciting and cool. You know, everybody's talking to each other and it's, you know, it's a free for all. What the heck do we do? And, you know, marketing was in the position of having to train the organization on what it all means. And then the tide turned and the business started saying, well, what's the value of being on Twitter? I'm not really sure it makes sense. And, you know, so it kind of came back around on us. And the only one that can tell us where we should be, what we should be creating, is our customers. In the digital world we live in, it's an absolutely 100% knowable thing what content we should create and what channels we should be on. All you have to do is look at Google. Google Autofill will tell you all of the things that your audience is looking for. Or, you know, Google Trends will tell you which one's more important. Or, you know, BuzzSumo is, you know, a tool I love to use that tells me what topics people are talking about, what channels they're sharing it on, what types of content they like. It'll even tell you, if you pay, you know, $200 a year, it'll tell you who the most influential voices are. And so we live in this world where all of those questions are answerable. And yet, you know, we too often just decide to listen to our boss, who thinks he or she knows better, and not to our customer. So it, you know, it just takes that first step of saying, the you know, my boss doesn't know better, the company doesn't know what to create, our customers know what they want, and they're telling us every day with digital signals. We just have to listen.
Who are some of your favorite examples of people that are listening to those digital signals?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I think, often cited examples. You've got, you know, you've got GE, which, you know, GE is an interesting one because I think that they've done a great job of kind of implementing that design thinking or, you know, rapid iteration, test and fail approach. You know, they're experimenting and, you know, a lot of their experiments don't always work, but some of them are, you know, are amazing. Right. And so, I think GE is doing a great job of trying to take an industrial B2B, you know, organization, with an amazing history of innovation and trying to extend that sort of culture and brand onto the way that they do marketing. And because of that, you've seen their CMO, Beth Comstock, former CMO, be elevated into the C-suite and onto the executive board. And, you know, how many organizations see that progression happen with their marketing? And the reason I think it works for her is works for GE is because she took, you know, she took the risks and decided to place some bets and said it was okay to fail, but listen to the data. And then, you know, place their bets on the ones that paid off. And so, you know, I think they're a great example in the B2B space. You know, I love to talk about American Express Open Forum, which, you know, essentially the earliest form of modern content marketing. They created a platform that produces the single, you know, I always say to people, they created this platform that is the single largest source of leads for their entire company, for their small business division. Imagine you're the marketing manager. You're the marketer that owns that platform. Like when I would, you know, I worked in corporate marketing departments for 20 years. I always wanted to be the guy that had the number one program that was driving leads and sales. And there is somebody like that at American Express. And, you know, we all have examples like that, that we could point to and you know, and really just emulate and test and see if they work for our businesses as well. So, you know, there's a number of other examples. AdobeCMO.com, I think, does a great job of focusing on customers. In the consumer space, you've got L'Oreal owning makeup.com. And, you know, what's crazy about makeup.com is it's an e-commerce platform for Maybelline Makeup owned by L'Oreal. They also link to their competitors. Why would they do so? Well, that's crazy. Why would they do that? They do it because they know their audience is smart enough to pick up on if they're just being selfish and blatantly promoting their own products. And, you know, and it works for them. They're driving tons and tons of revenue on a platform, a marketing platform that delivers not just revenue, but more revenue than it costs to run. So, you know, that's the future.
Well, and they're listening to those digital signals too, like you were talking about, kind of connecting the dots, the at odds worlds with all of these different mm-hmm. channels we could or should be on, and yeah. the revenue goals internally, looking at that through the lens mm-hmm. of the customer and what they're looking for. Yeah. And yeah, you could have stopped short and done just the Maybelline branded portal. But something much bigger, like you're talking about there, linking to competitors, mm-hmm. has tremendous customer yeah. value. But again, it's one of those, I think, you know, feeding back to the fear and what we're mm-hmm. clinging to, I think that's, you know, can be concerning because that too might not look like marketing mm-hmm. or traditional right. marketing or what it's supposed to look like.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, am I allowed to blow your mind with my next sort of progression?
Do it.
I know. I set it up. I should have.
I know. I was going to say, well, I can't say no now.
So I have a really boring comment to make now. So, you know, we'll see if it's interesting. No. So what's really interesting is that if you follow the digital signals and you sort of accept that as marketing leaders, we have to give up control. We no longer know what works. We have to give control out to our customer base. What's really fascinating, and you sort of saw a hint of this in Sweden, but what's really fascinating is we're starting to see HR becoming the new marketing department. And what I mean by that is we're not influenced by television ads or banners on the sides of websites or billboards on the sides of interstates. They just don't work for 90%, if not more, of the brands out there. But we do listen to people just like us. And the only way that an organization can tap into that channel, people just like their customers, is their employees. That's the only channel that has more ROI and more effectiveness than any other marketing channel or approach that a company can take. And so, you know, LinkedIn is sort of leading the way in this. And I love to tell this great story by our friend Jason Miller, who essentially set out to prove this. And, you know, just a couple of stats. The employees inside a company have in aggregate 10 times more connections than any brand social account that exists. So on average, employees have 10 times the number of personal connections than any brand in the world, the most popular brand in the world's individual social connections. So the power of the employee base is 10x what the company could do on its own. 3% of employees inside organizations are responsible for 30% of the clicks on corporate websites. So think about that. 3% of your employees at any company are responsible for 30% of the traffic that you're getting to your corporate website. So imagine what would happen if you activated 10% or 15% or 50% of your employees. And so, you know, it starts with asking what's in it for our customers. You know, everything you do in marketing should be about what's in it for our customers. well, your employees are customers too. And so if you take that next step, and again, this all comes out of digital signals. If you're doing the right listening, you see this. And it's, you know, it's a really unique and rare company that's doing this today, but the ones that are doing it are seeing these massive increases in the rates of return from their marketing efforts.
That is mind-blowing. I love that stat. It's one of my favorites about, you know, how connected our employees are and how we can tap into that. And it's mind-blowing, and it's also frustrating that so many, that's what you get kind of just going out of the gate doing nothing. And to your point of what could you do to amplify that, I sound really negative, like the glass is half empty guy. I shake my head because instead of even amplifying it, there's so many out there working in the other direction that don't want their people connected to their brand and that spend all of this time concerned about, you know, what they're going to say, what they're going to do. I've, you know, talked with organizations where employees are afraid to claim that they work for the business in their social profile as well. So
it's back to the fear, you know, it's back to the fear and for some brands, I will say, you know, if you work at Comcast or if you work at United or if you work at Wells Fargo, you know, if you're an employee at some of these organizations that have had some, and I'm a fan of some of them, I actually hate one of them. I won't mention. I'm actually a big fan of one of them and a big detractor of another. I won't name them, but you know, if you're an employee at some of those companies, you're afraid because there's a lot of people that are angry with the services and some of the you know, the issues that have popped up with those brands and other brands, you know, recently. You know, so there's that fear. But on the other hand, if you put even the smallest amount of fear from the senior levels of an organization about being active on social, it escalates and snowballs down the organizational ladder, like in a massive way. And so, you know, even the tiniest bit of fear and trepidation gets amplified to the point where, like you said, employees are afraid. The organizations that have reversed that trend are seeing massive amounts of impact. And so, you know, it's a choice. You know, it's really just comes down to a choice. You know, it's I'll never forget. I saw Will Smith interviewed at a marketing technology conference 2 years ago. You know, I don't know what he was doing there, but it was a pretty interesting interview. And, you know, he was talking about marketing and he said he was talking about his 23-year-old son or 24-year-old son who had a girlfriend and he was making fun of him like, oh, you know, you better treat her right. Don't go cheating on her behind her back. And he was saying that he's like, Dad, people don't cheat anymore. Like, we live in a world of transparency where you can't get away with that anymore. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I've never, like, you know, from the mouth of babes or 24-year-olds, I guess, for me. But it's true of brands too, right? We can't get away with the kinds of things that are going to piss customers off, and that's what gets amplified. So if we focus on our customers, we ask the question, what's in it for them in everything that we do? We then ask, well, what's in it for our employees? You know, these are the companies that are going to lead the way in the future.
So how can you reverse that or start to reverse that? I know doing everything and, you know, not, I know that that's a multiple step process, but what are some initial steps that you can take to reverse that trend of having people involved in your marketing even more?
So this is the question, Nick, that I'm really struggling, and I think I have an idea. So I'll tell you where my current thinking is. But this is like it's the purpose of my life to answer this question, and it's because I wrote a book called The Content Formula because I heard from all these CMOs like, oh, content marketing doesn't have any ROI. And I'm like, here's a book. There's 15 ways you can prove ROI. And then I went back to the CMOs that I was talking to that I wrote the book for, and I said, why haven't you done content marketing? And they came up with basically all of the reasons we've talked about. You know, we're afraid, and the CEO tells me to get on Snapchat, and I'm just doing what I'm told. And so I set out to answer that question exactly. And so here's my theory. Some companies and customer service focused organizations use NPS, Net Promoter Score. And I think many of your listeners probably know what that is, but mm-hmm. basically it's a single question asked relatively frequently. Would you recommend us to your friends or, you know, or people you know? And there's, you know, a math calculation that takes out the biggest fans and subtracts out the biggest detractors, and you get this net score. And companies that are using Net Promoter Score do see higher rates of return, higher customer loyalty and retention, but it's not enough. And studies are showing that it's not enough to just ask your customers, would you recommend us? So my theory, and I'm currently in market with research to test this, and the early indicators are that there's a direct correlation with my hypothesis. And the hypothesis is you have to ask employees, not customers, ask employees if they feel that their ideas are encouraged. So I want to, like, you're probably thinking, like, well, what the heck does that have to do with customer satisfaction and loyalty? Mm-hmm. Employees who are on the front line, who are dealing with customers every day, are the only ones that can create happy, advocating, loyal customers. And so it's not enough to just ask your customers if they recommend you. You have to go to your employees that have the ability to impact them, to get them to create recommending, loyal, advocating customers. So that's it. If you want to figure out how to drive this change in your organization, start asking your employees if they feel that their ideas are encouraged, the ideas that drive innovation, customer satisfaction, you know, the kinds of change that organizations need, that's the secret to making this change happen.
That's great, because that's a smart way to get at that, I think, because if their ideas are encouraged, they're more engaged, they're bringing that to the front line, they are happy, engaged employees that are probably on their way to creating and helping you create happy, engaged customers as well.
That's it. So, you know, and I'm not the first one to, there is a correlation between happy and engaged employees, happy and engaged customers, and very profitable, rising corporate profit companies. Jim Stengel wrote the book Grow, where he didn't look at what drove those employees that are engaged or customers, but it did prove that there is an absolute correlation between happy and engaged customers, employees, and stock prices. So he showed that correlation. He didn't answer the question of how do you get there? And part of it comes to purpose. You know, so the companies that say, they simply say they want happy employees, actually tend to have happy employees. It's pretty simple. But how do you create that culture? And that's why I've developed this one question survey that, like I said, I'm doing the research in right now. The correlation is almost 100% that where there's a culture that supports ideas and innovation from employees, you also have this feeling, that this perception that the company is innovative, and customers that are more satisfied and more loyal, and that refer more other customers to you. So more to come on that, but I'm excited to see the results of the survey.
Awesome. That is, I'm excited as well, and that is fascinating. As we think about happy, engaged employees and happy, loyal customers, all of this happiness makes me think of one of our final questions here on the On Brand podcast, and that, of course, is a brand that has made you, Michael Brenner, smile recently.
Yeah. I'm going to say Amazon. So many people love Amazon, but Amazon has changed my life. I mean, literally, I tell my wife that every day is like Christmas, because every day Amazon shows up with, you know, most of the time it's not a present. It's like toilet paper. but you know, I got four kids, so we go through a lot of paper products in this house, let me tell you. But it's every day, it's another day, it's another minute I don't have to spend, you know, in the car heading to a store, you know, with an experience that I don't love. And you know, so Amazon made me smile this morning when my mom called, because, you know, my sort of weekly tech check, tech support call from my mom, who's having trouble with her iPhone, and she can't find a case for her phone, it broke. And, you know, I went on Amazon, and in about 30 seconds while I'm talking to her, had an iPhone case, shipping to her door. And it just, you know, makes me smile. So whatever they're doing, keep it up.
That is a great example, and incredibly applicable. Michael, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so you can find me at marketinginsidergroup.com, or I'd love to interact and spend a lot of my day on Twitter at Brenner Michael, and would love to connect with your audience and answer any further questions they may have.
That is great, and we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Michael, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
And as we noted, you can find links to everything that we talked about over at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.